This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've all heard that living thankfully is a good thing, but an attitude of gratitude is a phrase easier to roll off your lips than put into practice. Could the secret be enhancing your thankfulness by giving to others? This hour's guests seem to think so. Each has a long history of service-oriented work. Each now heads up a significant service organization. And each has a story to tell about how their life took this path. But let me pause at that word, story. There'll likely be much inspiration to draw from as we hear from the leaders of the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, the Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, and the faith-based group Rise. But we've also got room for your story. Have a tale to tell on how thankfulness gained importance in your world? I'm hoping you'll share it when our conversation begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Creating thankfulness for yourself by giving to others. Does that sound a little counterintuitive? Or is this strategy for putting more gratitude and even joy in your life something that makes complete sense to you? The connection between thankfulness and giving will be our focus this hour. And if you've got thoughts to offer, I hope you will join us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Here to help, three people with much experience in the concept we are addressing. From the relatively new faith group Rise, based in Harrisonburg, Amanda Garber. From the Charlottesville-based group Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, that organization's relatively new executive director, Margaret Burris. And from the charity that serves a wide swath of Western and Central Virginia, the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, that organization's leader, Michael McKee. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, we've got at least three things to get to in depth this hour. The strategy that I just mentioned, your personal experiences with it, and then specifics, of course, about the work each of your organizations are doing. And in my personal experience, people who do your kind of work tend to be terribly shy about talking about themselves, but love to shine as much light as possible on the organization that they're working with. So I'm hoping we can weave back and forth between personal and organizational stories. So let's start like this. I want to give each of you, to begin with, 60 seconds to tell us what your organization is and what it does. And after we get that overview, we'll, well, just see where we can go from there. So, Michael, starting with you, a snapshot, please, of what the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank is and does.
Certainly. The Blue Ridge Area Food Bank gathers food nationally from all types of sources, the USDA, manufacturers, grocers, and the community itself through food drives. We bring all this food into our main distribution center in Verona, which is just up from Stanton, and we parcel out some of it to our distribution centers in Winchester, Charlottesville, and Lynchburg. We serve 25 counties. And we provide that food to our partner agencies, organizations like Loaves and Fishes, that in turn provide that food directly to people in need. So in all, through our agencies, we're serving an average of 113,000 people each and every month. And last year alone, we provided about 22 million pounds of food, enough food for about 18 million meals. So it's an enormous enterprise, much bigger than we ever thought, I'm sure, when the food bank was established a little more than 30 years ago. But it represents, I think, a response to an enormous level of need that has just about doubled in the last 7 years or so.
Michael McKee, thank you. Let's go next to the lady sitting next to you, Margaret McNett Burris.
Well, I'm the executive director at Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, and we are one of, perhaps the largest direct distributor of food assistance in Charlottesville area. We were first founded as a ministry of a local church, the First United Methodist Church, in 2004. But we quickly kind of grew to this sort of grassroots volunteer effort, which was involving a lot of churches and organizations. So in 2011, we incorporated as an independent nonprofit, 501c3 organization. Last month we served about over 1,600 households in the Charlottesville area, which was over 5,000 individuals. And we gave out about £1 million of food, over £1 million of food in the last year. So a lot of times people ask us the difference between us and the food bank, because the food bank operates in Charlottesville. And really it is more, I guess you would agree with this, that you guys focus more on the collection of the food. And your agencies focus more on the direct distribution.
That's right. It's a partnership.
And it's a partnership.
Neither one can fulfill our missions if we didn't have that partnership.
Right.
Thank you, Margaret Burris. Amanda Garber.
I am the pastor of Rise. Rise is a 3-year old. We turned 3 September the 12th. Faith community. Some people call us a church. Some people call us a faith community. We prefer the language of movement. So movement of God's radical and inclusive love and grace. And we have a unique outreach to young adults ages 18 to 30-ish. Now, I want to clarify, everyone is welcome. People of all ages, ethnicities, sexual orientations, everyone is welcome. But we do have a unique outreach to that 18 to 30-ish demographic. We are a very missional community. We are outward facing, and we are about engaging in our community and transforming our community and finding partners wherever we can find them and going to those intersections of pain and hope and seeing the possibility there for healing and wholeness. A whole lot of our emphasis is local. We certainly focus to a certain extent international and nationally too, but we are most powerfully called to our own backyards. And it's been a beautiful 3-year journey, and we look forward to many more years.
Amanda Garber, let me go first to you then with the next question. This concept of creating more of a sense of thankfulness and gratitude in your life by ironically giving to others. One of the reasons we asked you here today is that your organization in the 3 years of its existence has established a reputation for lots of drives oriented towards giving towards others, whether they're food drives for local region or other kinds of drives to help people locally or drives to help people in impoverished places in the world. So this concept, I create more thankfulness and gratitude and joy in my life by giving to others. Does that make sense to you? And if so, how?
Oh, it makes an enormous amount of sense to me. And I think to people who associate with this movement of love called Rise, very often people come to us saying, how can I make a difference? What is the purpose of my life? How can I make meaning in my life? And they are, at least at first, often looking for a big bang, I think, something shiny, something much larger than what they end up finding. And what we are discovering on this journey is that the world doesn't tend to change in big bangs, in big shiny ways. It tends to change in small, incremental beautiful steps. Mother Teresa said, we cannot do great things, but we can do small things with great love. And so I often say a lot of what we do through and as a part of Rise is not all that unique or interesting or shiny. It's very simple. And often very small. It's a bar of soap through our hygiene ministry, Rise and Shine. It's packing backpacks full of food for kids who need it at Spotswood Elementary School. And I could go on and on and on.
Okay, before you do.
Yeah, I could, but I won't.
Margaret, your organization, as you mentioned, started church-based, but mm-hmm. it has expanded beyond that. People of all faiths and people who would not call themselves religious at all are involved in what you do. So tell me about your sense of this concept of creating something good in your life by giving to others.
Well, I was just, as Amanda was talking, I was thinking about the idea of empathy and how really there and what you said before the show about that desire that we all have to connect with other human beings. And the only way we really can do that is to somehow get inside somebody else's skin to the best of our ability. And the only way we can do that is through empathy. And the only way we can do that is to step back and to try to see the world a little bit through somebody else's eyes. And I think, especially when you give to people, especially when it's in person, and so I'm thinking particularly about volunteerism right now, there's this sense where when you let yourself really see that there's not a lot of distance between you and the person you're giving to, that there really is a common shared sense of humanity, a shared sense of need that you could be in their shoes. I think that empathy expands what we're able to see of the world and really deeply enriches us.
No, I agree. I think the really wonderful thing about gratitude is, like any emotion, you've got to do something with it, right? And if you're sad, you cry. If you're happy, you might laugh. And if you're really grateful, you're going to give. It needs to be expressed. And I think one of the things that is most remarkable about the people I meet who are involved in the food bank or the work that you all do, Margaret, is how deeply touched they are by lives of people they don't necessarily meet firsthand or perhaps don't ever really get to know. And to understand the scope of one's gratitude, you got to think about the lives of the people we're working with. So think about someone who's living in poverty, who may not have enough money to get through the month, who's a month behind on the rent, who has two or three kids, not enough money to feed them. Kids need dental care but can't go to the dentist. The stress, the anguish, the worry that people live with day to day to day, never mind can they keep their job. And when you're giving food to them, you are relieving that stress. You are providing them with the means to take care of their children for another day. And when people understand the impact of simply sharing food with another family and what that means, because it's really, sure, a little about the food, but it's so much more of that. We all have this experience of having a friend or a family member who suffered some sort of loss, perhaps a death in the family. And what do? We show up with a casserole. It's what our culture does,
right? It's
universal,
right? Yeah.
And I think it's universal in a lot of cultures.
and what happens? So the person receives the casserole. You may not make it off the porch, and you can see a tear in the eye. You can see a little of relief. And what you realize is it's knowing that someone cares about them that matters most. And so you realize that you're providing something without speaking necessarily that makes a profound impact on their moment, if not their life. And then you turn and you walk off that porch, and how do you feel? You feel great.
Transformed.
Because you are grateful and you've given, and when you feel grateful and you've given, you do it again, and you feel great and you do it again, and then we at the food bank feel great. So it's just something that really continues to move all the way through.
And I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking, fundamentally, giving and living as generous people is about our transformation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's what it's really all about, is about our fundamental transformation.
Amanda Garber, Margaret Burris, Michael McKee, our guests, they have much more to tell us. But you're going to be invited to join in, too. We'll be giving out the phone number in just a few moments. And then we'll continue the conversation in a bit more than 1 minute. So So to you on the other side of your radio, why do you think some people seem especially dedicated to service and others of us not so much? 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our number, or if you prefer, 888-967-2825. You can also post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Our guests, Executive Director of the Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, Margaret McNett-Burris, Pastor of the Faith Group Rise, Amanda Garber, and Chief Executive Officer of the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, Michael McKee. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and we've got some posts on our Facebook page here. I had them a moment ago. Oh, here they are. This is from Lawrence, who says, there's a perception that in some relatively closed-off communities, like with the Amish, people are more helpful to each other than in the rest of America. Is there any truth to this? Also, is there evidence about differences in generosity in rural versus urban areas or by income levels? So we got three or four questions there, and I saw some nodding of the heads at the end.
I'll take a stab at that one. So first of all, giving correlates highly to value. So any community, whether it's a faith community or any other, that really spends a lot of time articulating, defining, and teaching values that are inclusive of giving is a community in which we'll find habits and patterns of giving. We also know from research that parents who take their kids to church and or volunteer and or give and talk about giving and otherwise engage with their kids around giving have an 80% chance of having a child who becomes an adult who gives. But parents who don't necessarily do that have only a 25% chance of having a child who grows up into adult who gives. So it's about values, but it's also about teaching those values and engaging with children over time around those values so that one generation after another lives that out through a life of giving and generosity and service. Now, about the rural versus urban and all of that, there is some research to indicate that people in rural areas are more proportionately generous than those living in suburban and urban areas. And there is also some research to suggest that people who are highly affluent while making larger gifts are not as proportionately generous as those who are of more modest means. With some theories around living closer to point of need, one might be more empathetic, to Margaret's point earlier.
Explain what you mean by proportionately generous.
So giving a higher proportion of one's income. So someone making $40,000 a year who gives $1,000 is perhaps proportionally more generous than someone making $150,000 a year and giving $1,000.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, particularly about the first part of Lawrence's question, referring to the Amish, but I guess he's thinking about other communities, too, that tend to be closed off from the rest of the world, that in that type of community, people are more oriented towards helping each other out? Certainly, I think he's right.
It's their value system. I mean... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's taught from before day one.
Well, I wonder, based on that question, if there's something about the flip side of not being generous to others, particularly to strangers, because there's fear involved. If you're kind of in a closed-off community, I suspect in most Amish communities, everybody knows everybody. And in lots of the world today... I know I moved into a new house 3 months ago, and I only know the names of two neighbors, and we barely ever talk to each other. I think there's lots of places around America today where we don't know our neighbors at all.
Mm-hmm. Which is why giving is more important than ever, because I think...
Does fear keep us from giving?
Oh, absolutely.
I think so.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
This is one of my soapboxes, but I think that we live in a culture of fear that is killing us. We live in a disembodied, fearful culture that is leading to violence and all kinds of horrifying things that we could spend the rest of the time talking about. But that's not, yeah, we're not going to do that. So I think a significant step toward healing and wholeness culturally is learning how to give and live as generous people, because at the core of generosity is human connection and is what we all long for more than anything, relationship. Hearing the other person's story, seeing the other person, theologically, I would say, as made in the image of God, or as fully, you know, human. And it's amazing what happens to fear and the lies that we are told by the media, culturally, whatever, or that are passed down from generation to generation. It's amazing how we start to see through those when we have basic human connection.
When you think about, we talk about how crises can bring us together. Hurricane Sandy comes through and we all come together, and even the nonsense and the conflict in Washington quiets down. And I don't know that it's the hurricane that brought us together, but I do think it's the response that brings us together. Mm-hmm. It's the spontaneous acts of kindness and generosity that quiets all of that conflict and all of that noise, if not just for a little while. And it brings us together. And we find that in common, because that sort of that human response, mm-hmm. there is that desire to be connected and to be kind. That, mm-hmm. I think, is really fundamental to all of us. And it does sort of get lost in the noise day to day with all the conflict around us.
I think we're wired, really. I come from a place of believing in original blessing. And so I think we are wired to be generous, giving people. And studies show this. I remember several weeks ago, maybe even a couple months at this point, reading a study that said they're finding that neurologically, there are neurological responses, kind of endorphin kind of responses, when we give to others. And so this is probably a good idea for our health. And I'm like, duh. How much money was spent on this study? But, you know, it's science.
It is.
We're wired to do this.
I do think that, you know, this whole thing of fear is what holds us back. And it's often when we're confronted, I guess, with a potential opportunity to give, there is fear. I mean, there is fear when you walk into a volunteer situation for the first time and you don't know. And you don't know if, are people going to be nice? Are they going to be angry? Are they going to be friendly? Are they going to be grateful? And that fear can hold us back. And I think it can be a little, excuse me, I think it can be a little, it goes pretty deep because of that desire for connection. There's also a desire, what if the connection doesn't happen? I mean, the fear of what if the connection doesn't happen? What if my motives are misunderstood? What if the person thinks I'm trying to patronize them or I'm looking down on them? And that can hold us back. But I was thinking about the Amish. It's not quite an Amish story, but I was thinking about when I was younger and kind of in my wild, have a wild party days.
You didn't have a wild party day in your life.
No, I did.
As long as you said that, for the sake of anybody who's just tuned in, you're listening right now to The Voice. Well, I'm Tom, but the voice you've been hearing and about to hear more of is Margaret Burris from Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry.
He was one wild woman.
Yeah. And anyway, in my 20s, I was living in this house in Madison, and we were right down the road. We had these Mennonite neighbors, and we were, you know, it was a Saturday night, and we had loud music. We had some people with Harleys running up and down the road, and the next day, I had gone to work, and I came home from work, and one of my friends was at the house, and he was just sitting there really quietly. And I said, you know, what's going on? And he said, well, the Mennonites down the road came over. And he didn't tell me what it was about at first. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, they've called the police, you know, for, you know, being too loud and too rowdy. And we've disturbed them and they're going to tell us we're going to hell. You know, this was what was in my mind. And I said, well, what did they want? And he had this bag that I hadn't noticed sitting on the floor. And he started pulling out like all this stuff that they brought us from their garden. And, you know, and it was something that there was some a situation that made me know that they knew. I mean, that they had heard us, that we had disturbed them. But instead of responding, you know, like, oh, those crazy, you know, young people who live next door, they brought us canned goods and, you know, Mennonite things from the Mennonite garden. And it really did impact me pretty deeply.
You still remember that?
I still remember it.
Yeah. We were saying earlier, too, that a part of generosity is also learning how to receive well. That so often giving, if we're not careful, can become very paternalistic.
Yeah.
And so learning how the incredible transformational power of receiving too. Our motto at RISE is receive love, give love, repeat. trying to remember that all aspects of that incredible circle of generosity are indescribably important, and we cannot get out of balance.
The power of thankfulness, the power of giving to others, and the intersection between the two are all under consideration today. If you've got thoughts to share or questions to ask, we'd love to hear from you. By phone, 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, you can find us listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Amanda Garber, pastor of the faith group RISE. You used a phrase a little bit earlier in the hour about the intersection of pain and hope. Tell us more about that.
Well, originally, RISE connects with a lot of people who, for whatever reason, this whole church thing is not part of their story, or they have walked away from church. And what we have learned is there is often language used in church culture that does not make sense to people who either weren't raised in that culture or aren't a part of it. One of those words is mission. That makes sense to people on the inside, but not always to people who aren't a part of the church bubble, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so we've had to learn different ways to translate. And so that was a phrase that we developed to talk about what mission is. Mission is finding the intersections of pain and brokenness and whatever that looks like. And there's more than enough of that to go around. But also hope and possibility, because my experience has been you can find those intersections all over the place, literally right next door, down the street. You don't have to go far. It's when we are in those metaphorical intersections or have the courage to go to those intersections that we discover that we are transformed.
Give me an example. And I know you've got dozens of the different kinds of outreach activities that your group is involved in, but fill in some of this picture for me, if you would, Amanda, of an intersection between pain and hope and what was going on in practical terms in one particular instance.
Well, I see all the time, particularly, again, I spend a lot of time with a lot of the millennial generation, that 18 to 30-ish group. Constantly, I see them amazed by how these relatively small but profound experiences rock their world, to use their language. I'm just thinking of it because it was on November 5th, so relatively recent. We had a meal packaging event called Stop Hunger Now, where we worked with a group called Stop Hunger Now.
This is the national organization that part of what they do is find local partners to get together, sometimes by the hundreds, and package food that then gets sent out primarily.
Internationally, primarily. Some of it may stay within the U.S., but most of it goes international.
So you had an event where you partnered with this national organization.
Yes, then we also partnered with the Muslim Student Association at JMU and the Mahatma Gandhi Center for Global Nonviolence. Beautiful partners. Again, we firmly believe that...
Okay, but I want to keep you on the intersection of pain and hope.
Okay, so we find partners and we go there, and it's really such a simple concept. They bring in rice, beans, a lot of non-perishable food items. And our responsibility is to package 40,000 of these meals. We were done in under 2 hours. It's phenomenal because
more than 300 people.
We had about 350-ish people come. Yeah,
and so you've got an 18-wheeler truck pulls up, and it's got all of
bring everything we need. They set it all up in one of the JMU Festival ballrooms, and much to my relief, people started pouring in.
And you ended up packaging 40,000 meals.
Ish, yeah.
Tell me about how that relates to the intersection of pain and hope.
Well, obviously, the pain is hunger and all of the implications, justice implications and implications of global hunger. And the hope was 350 or so young adults came and put on hairnets, which is a great image. It's kind of the great equalizer, you know, and line up at tables and start working together. Assembly line style to package these meals. We've done this 4 times, and every single time I stand there and the energy in the room is palpable and the hope in the room is palpable. And I heard young adult after young adult after young adult saying, this is amazing.
And it's amazing not just because you're providing hope to the people who are receiving the food packets, but you're providing hope and meaning to the people who are doing the work.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's what
really
it's
about. Really
that two-way street.
Yes.
Because people are really looking for meaning. People are looking to make a difference for others in the world around them. They're looking for a way to give back. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, they realize they're really gaining themselves. That's the beautiful thing about gratitude and giving. And the more they're able to give, the more they want to because of how it makes them feel. And when you're confronting a life or a world out there that's full of conflict and bickering
and narcissism.
Noise and narcissism and all of that messy ugliness, right?
Mm-hmm.
To engage in something that is kind and thoughtful and generous and loving is this enriching experience. So who wouldn't want to do more of that, right?
It's addictive.
They're going to come back. Yeah, absolutely. We have volunteers at the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank who come, you know, 2 or 3 times a week and have been coming for years, not because they love sorting food, although who wouldn't, but because of the sense of community they have with the others around them. It's such a fulfilling experience, and it really brings joy to their lives.
It helps them find meaning and purpose in their lives, which is another fundamental human need I think we all have. Relationship, connection, and purpose.
We all have. Back in the 1980s, I was working with a rescue mission in Los Angeles. And I remember this was during the Ethiopian famine. And I was in Skid Row. And I got to tell you, the 40 square blocks of Skid Row, L.A. are unlike any you've ever seen in terms of human misery in this country. And I was in this rescue mission, and there were a few hundred homeless people who were living in the streets, who were gathered together in the chapel prior to lunch. And they took a collection amongst themselves for people in Ethiopia. They had nothing.
Yeah.
And they took a collection and raised a few $100 to give to people living in Ethiopia, people they've never met.
And that's the intersection of pain and hope.
We're also addressing the intersection between creating more of a sense of gratitude and joy in your life and giving to others. And our conversation about that's going to continue in just a bit more than 1 minute. Stanley in Stanton will be our next call when we get back. WMRA Talk is really an easy way to remember our phone number, but some people prefer all numbers, so that would be 888-967-2825. Hey, let me tell you that Amanda Garber has worked as a church pastor in Newport News and Danville, Virginia, as a campus youth minister in Harrisonburg, and these days she leads the Harrisonburg-based faith group Rise. As long as we're telling stories, Michael McKee began his career doing public relations work for large American corporations, but after a few years of that, switched over to a PR firm that specialized in helping nonprofits. Then it was on to university fundraising, a stint leading the Virginia Institute of Autism, and today serves as CEO of the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. Margaret McNett Burris also started professional life in the for-profit world. Her charity work began in China in the 1990s as a staffer for the groups Serving Humanity in Crisis, as well as China Harvest. This past summer, after moving home to Charlottesville, she took on the role of executive director at the Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're going next to Stanton. Stanley, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Good afternoon. One of the things that has hit me is about this word hope that you've been using a lot. Something that occurred to me over the last year or so, I'm surprising after all these years of age, was that hope is really a verb and a noun. And we've all heard this, you know, I hope I get an A, I hope there's food on the table, I hope, as a verb. But these organizations that we're talking about provide hope as a noun, and that's a solid thing. You know, I have hope, and then that gets you through. And it was really an encouraging thing for me to think about that, as hope as a noun is really a positive thing that you can almost touch. I'm a volunteer with the food bank, and good to hear you, Michael. And I just wanted to pass on that thought, because I think thinking of hope as a noun and being something you can touch is very encouraging.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I just when you were talking, I was thinking about when people come in.
This is Margaret Burris.
Margaret Burris. And when people come into the food pantry and, you know, so often one of the things that really strikes me about the people who come in is just the sense of gratitude that people exhibit. And it's very touching. And I was just thinking about them and how when, and not just the people who come in, but also the volunteers, how being involved in giving and receiving really does impart hope also to the people who are giving, because it kind of restores your sense of it restores your sense of connection. It restores mm-hmm. your sense of something divine mm-hmm. being in humanity, even when sometimes it's broken or marred or messed up, as it is in me. that's really thanks for that comment. And I really do see that week after week.
Stanley, thank you so much for your call. You've actually given us hope, because when somebody breaks the ice by being the first caller, talking about as challenging a concept as some of the stuff we're challenging to talking about today, because it touches on real personal stuff, but you may have given other people encouragement and hope to call in and share their observations. I hope so. Stanley, thanks again. Our phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK. Our guests from the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, Michael McKee, from the Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, Margaret Burris, and from the faith group Rise, Amanda Garber. We're looking at the intersection between gratitude and giving to others. We'd love to hear if you have any thoughts or questions about it. You said something a little earlier, Michael, about there's a basic human desire to be kind. And I wonder if there might be somebody listening whose response was, really?
I think there really is. I don't think we're born bad. That may be learned as a result of one's life experiences. But I think we just have to look to the spontaneous acts of kindness in the world around us. There's no reason for someone living in Harrisonburg to write a check to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank to provide food to people that person never even meets. There's no logical reason to do that. There's only kindness that may be inspired by any number of things, how they were raised, what they see in the world around them, their desire to give back in the community, whatever it is. But I think it's a very natural urge. And I think as basic a need food is, so is the need to give to others. I spoke a few moments ago about homeless people in Los Angeles giving to provide relief to famine victims in Ethiopia. giving allows us to rise above our own circumstances, mm-hmm. whatever those might be. We can rise above whatever we think our own shortfalls are. We can connect to something greater than ourselves. We can express love. We can express compassion. We can exercise that compassion muscle. And when we do that, we do feel a lot better about ourselves. So it's not entirely selfless. Being kind mm-hmm. isn't always selfless, because I do think we gain something in that exchange. But I do think it's this basic need that all people have. It may be buried under mm-hmm. fear. We talked about that right. earlier. But it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about your experience in Skid Row in Los Angeles, I was thinking of an example that I saw when I was in China, which was of a group of Chinese who didn't have a lot, but who were taking up funds to help North Koreans, which at the time there was, and still is, food shortages in North Korea. And I remember how much it impacted me, seeing that here were some folks that really by most of the world's standards were very poor, and yet they had this impulse to help those who were in even worse condition than they were.
On our Facebook page, I think it was today, a gentleman in Winchester lost his home to a fire over the weekend, lost his job on Monday, and brought in three really big bags of food to our branch up in Winchester because he was really touched by the community's response and his neighbor's response to the circumstances he was in.
Yeah.
And so how did he respond to losing his home, losing his job, and this outpouring of support from others? By giving back. I think, mm-hmm. I really do think that's human nature. The rest of it is just a lot of overlay.
Mm-hmm. I would, to echo an earlier theme, I absolutely believe the opposite of generosity is fear. A fear of not having enough, mm-hmm. a fear of what will others think. And we are transformed. I say over and over and over again to myself and others, when we offer these relatively simple but profound opportunities to give, ultimately, this is about our transformation. Ultimately, this is about us discovering that deep down in our bone marrow, we are all remarkably similar.
Yeah.
And theologically, I would say that God's love extends to all.
Yeah.
And when we can stop seeing the other as the other, mm-hmm. and instead a brother or sister in the human family,
right.
the transformation that can happen is life-changing.
Yeah. And sometimes, I was talking to my husband about this morning, and he was saying, you know, sometimes that's, in the beginning, that's a gritting of your teeth. Okay, I'm going to do this because I just know that this is what I'm supposed to do right now. But then as we just kind of get over that kind of uncomfortable feeling mm-hmm. that we might feel in the beginning, that's when that transformation starts to take place, and that's when the connection takes place,
mm-hmm.
And then that's when the joy and the fulfillment and the enrichment really comes.
888-WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember the Virginia Insight phone number. The idea that we can increase a sense of thankfulness in our lives by giving to others is the concept behind this hour's discussion. Got a question you've not yet heard addressed? A suggestion to offer? A story to tell? By phone 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are at WMRA's Virginia Insight. Amanda Garber, if somebody was to look at a listing of the activities, the projects that your faith-based group Rise is involved in, they'd see probably somewhere close to a dozen headings.
Oh, at least.
And I've got less than 2 minutes to have you describe one of them. I'm really kind of fascinated with the dream of a bakery, but if you'd rather talk about something else, just pick one.
No, you know, and our website, riseharrisonburg.com, is what I'll just throw out there. We have
There's also a link to it on our page.
Oh, thank you very much. check it out. But I would like to talk about the bakery. It is a really compelling dream that's grabbed a hold of us and just will not let go. We have a dream of what we call a missional bakery, I guess a bakery where pain and hope would intersect. And we would offer vocational opportunity and a sense of purpose and meaning to persons in our community from the refugee and immigrant communities, hoping that this would be a space where storytelling could occur, where over a wonderful pastry, we're also hoping, by the way, that the baked goods will come from their native lands. I think that would be really beautiful. But that over a wonderful pastry or piece of bread or whatever, that we could indeed see our shared humanity, that we could overcome some of those fearful ideas that we have about people from other cultures and other places, and instead see, wow, at the core of it all, we are all so similar. It would be a bakery rooted in peace building and shalom. We're going to do a few things very well, bake a few things very well, because I think earlier on in the show, it was said, it's about more. It's about so much more than bread. Mm-hmm. It's about the transformation of the world. One person at a time, one baked good at a time. So if anybody out there is excited by this vision, go on our website. Please contact us. We are looking for partners. We are very aware we cannot do this by ourselves. And I don't even think we're supposed to do this by ourselves. The best things in life happen with partners.
And it may not be all that hard to associate the word rise.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Margaret McNett Burris, your organization faces a challenge that food pantries throughout Virginia, throughout the country, groups like the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank talk about all the time. When it gets close to the holiday season, Thanksgiving, there's this outpouring of support, volunteers showing up from all over the place, people writing checks. In April and July and September, not so much.
Yeah, and I think that does show that intersection between giving and thanks, because people are focused on Thanksgiving, and so there's this real sort of outpouring like, oh, yeah, I have a lot to be thankful for, so I want to, you know, give to the soup kitchen or the food pantry or the food bank.
But part of what we're talking about here
all year
is
long.
If I want to create more joy in my life, more of a sense of gratitude, which really is a wonderful feeling, I think we all agree, to have in my life, maybe working with a food pantry in May is not such bad an idea.
And we do have opportunities all year round. We are open now 4 times a week, and we have a goal of eventually being open 6 days a week, and I think we're going to need to, because we have so many more people coming in month after month. And we're largely a volunteer organization. And actually, it's part of our mission does involve this whole thing, because we really do believe that the lives of volunteers are enriched as much as the people who come. We're fed.
And there's
the
a link to your organization on the Virginia Insight.
Yes, so we're at SevilleLoavesAndFishes.org.
Or on Virginia Insight, you just click
yeah.
the link. Michael McKee, I know you hate talking about this, so I save this to last when we've got less than 2 minutes left, but I'm going to ask you about it anyways. You started your career in the for-profit world, working in public relations for really big-name organizations, banks and major corporations from the commercial PR firm. In your early 20s, you're sitting in this office in Marina Del Rey, California, looking out over just gorgeous, beautiful waters, I'm sure. And somehow you ended up doing nonprofit work as a career. What's the story?
Well, doing that work, I realized that the most I could be was clever. And a friend of mine working for another PR firm, different clients, had a little sign on the back of her door, and it read, "The work is hard, the hours are long, and the client's ungrateful. But it's all worth it in the end because the rewards are shallow and meaningless." And that's how I felt. And then up pops this opportunity to work with a company that worked only with nonprofits. It's 1985, and my life is forever changed. And I realized, this is where I belong. You know, I am not going to be one of those people who goes off to China or really digs deep into the trenches in mission work, but I can apply my talents to making lives better. And I always was motivated to engage around the issue of poverty. And I think that it's so inspiring to me when what I find about poverty is when you start to really dig in and you get to know people, it breaks down the barriers you have and the way you protect yourself from the rest of the world. And you begin to understand you just don't know what leads people to where they are. There's so much pain behind.
You know what? We're going to get you back to tell more about your personal story. One, because I love watching the expression on your face as I'm getting you to do something you really don't want to do. And two, because it's really an inspiration to listen to. Our guests have been from the Harrisonburg-based faith group Rise, Amanda Garber, plus serving the greater Charlottesville region, Loaves and Fishes Food Pantries, Margaret McNett Burris, as well as from the charity that serves most of the Shenandoah Valley and much of Central Virginia, the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank's Michael McKee. Thank you also very much for making time for us.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about each of our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.